Hello, and welcome to This Week at Charlestown Road, a branch of the Heaven Bound podcast. My name is Jason Harden. I'm here with Roger Schaus, and this is where we reflect on the weekend that was. We dig a little deeper into a recent sermon to give you something to think about as this week unfolds, but also preview what's to come this next weekend at Charlestown Road. Roger, even though we had episodes unfold this past week on Monday and Wednesday and Friday through the magic of technology, I missed being in town with you this past week, but it's good to be with you again face to face.
I'm glad to have you back. It always feels like something's missing when you're gone.
Well, so. I appreciate that. And I appreciated the sermon from this past Sunday, even though I was out of town. Thanks to the efforts of just a great crew of guys that helps behind the scenes in broadcasting the good news from this physical location, literally all over the world. I was able to listen in, actually watch your sermon after the fact, and really appreciated how you took us back to the Gospel of Mark chapter 5. You said of all the chapters in the New Testament, maybe this is where you would most like to plant yourself.
I would, because it's just a series of three miracles. One follows the other. They're fast moving, lots of action, and that's the way the Gospel of Mark is presented. And it's just a fascinating thing. We talked about the sermon was entitled "The Positive Steps to Recovery," and we used the illustration of the Titanic laying on the ocean floor of the Atlantic. It's been discovered, but it cannot be recovered. It cannot be brought back up. And it's just laying there deteriorating. And we use that as a bridge to talk about a lot of lives spiritually. A lot of people have wrecked their lives. They realize they've wrecked their lives. And they're lying on the bottom of life, just kind of deteriorating, not the way God intended them to be. And so what we did is we looked at this demon-possessed man in Mark chapter 5. Great story. And how the steps there parallel our spiritual lives. And we start off by talking about the deteriorating effects of sin. And this man is presented to us in all three Gospels. He's screaming at night. He's been chained, but he broke the chains. He's cutting himself with rocks. He's naked. He's just a menace, we might say, and how scary he would be. And we talk about how sin does that to us. Sin just makes us not the people we should be. And then we see the divine confrontation with sin. Jesus confronted these demons and cast them out. And we're going to kind of talk about that a little bit more here in just a moment. And that's what Jesus does with us. He tries to drive the sin out of our life. He doesn't just put a star on our forehead and say, I love you the way you are and stay the way you are. He wants us to be a righteous and holy people. And as we stated in the lesson, Jesus will either run the sin out of your life, or the sin will run Jesus out of your life. They don't stay together. And then we talked about the demonstration of recovery. After the demons left this man, he's sitting down, he's clothed, he's in his right mind, he's a changed, calm person. And what's the difference sin out of our life makes when Jesus comes into our life? And that was kind of the nutshell of the sermon.
Yeah, yeah. So as you and I were discussing, I appreciate that recap. And as you and I were discussing, of course, how to spend this valuable time in the middle of the week, really trying to help people let the seed of God's word sink into their hearts. We always hope that as we preach sermons, they're not just one and done and life moves on and minds move on and we shut the book, but we continue to chew on what we have heard, especially in passages like this, straight from the mouth of Jesus. That led us back to the conclusion of the previous chapter. Mark chapter 5, of course, is not where Mark's gospel begins. And let me just recap very, very briefly the conclusion of what we have as Mark chapter 4, and then ask you about this bridge between chapter 4 and chapter 5. The last scene in Mark chapter 4 is evening has come, and Jesus says to his disciples, let us go across to the other side, speaking of the Sea of Galilee. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat just as he was, and other boats are with them, and a great windstorm arises, and waves, Mark tells us, were breaking into the boat so that the boat was already filling with water. But there in the stern is Jesus asleep on a cushion. And so they wake him up and they say, "Teacher, don't you care that we are perishing?" And just such incredible words. Don't just read over these or hear these idly of mind. Jesus awakes. He rebukes the wind and says to the sea, "Peace, be still." The wind ceases. There is a great calm. And he asks his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And Mark summarizes everything by telling us they were filled with great fear and they said to one another. This wasn't just one of them. This was a group discussion amongst themselves centering around this such a pivotal question. Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Now, Roger, you and I, we both know that oftentimes you prepare, you pour everything you've got into a sermon, and then over the course of the next day or two, it lingers with you. There was a connection, you noticed, even after preaching the sermon,
there
between
was.
Chapter 4 and chapter 5.
There was, and what's interesting is, Couple things I want to pull out of that miracle you just read.
Yeah.
Is first of all, in verse 38 of chapter 4, they do not ask Jesus, "Can you stop the storm? Are you powerful enough? Do you not care that we are dying? We are perishing." And the care question, it's like, are you callous? Are you heartless? Don't you care? We're dying here. They're wet. They're scared, and then Jesus calms the storm. No, you know, you and I, we can predict the weather sometimes. We can endure the weather, but we can't change the weather.
Right.
Jesus stopped the storm. And verse 41 says, they became very much afraid. They were afraid of the storm. Now they're afraid of Jesus because who is this, they ask. Now, here's the bridge to the demon-possessed man. As soon as that boat gets to the other side, Mark 5, verse 2, when they got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tomb with an unclean spirit met him. He comes running, verse 6 says, seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him. And remember, this man's been naked. This man's bloodied because he's cut himself. He's probably wild looking. I expect about 11 or 12 of those apostles got another foot back in that boat and they're saying, let's have a storm again.
Yeah.
Here we go. And how scared they might have been of this. But what's interesting, as chapter 4 ended with that question, who then is this? Jesus doesn't answer that. He doesn't say, well, boys, I'm the Son of God. Don't you get that? But that question is answered in the demon-possessed man.
Not what we would expect.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. So the demon-possessed man comes running up to Jesus. He says with a loud voice, verse 7, and shouting. And usually when we hear shouting, that's not a good sign. Shouting with a loud voice, verse 7 says, he says, "What business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God, do not torment me." Three things right there answered their question. Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? The demon-possessed man answered it. He answered by number one saying, this is Jesus. Now, they knew his name Jesus because they'd been with him. But how interesting, most likely this demon-possessed man had never met Jesus before. He acknowledges that this is Jesus. And then he acknowledges the position of Jesus. This is the Son of the Most High God. This is the Son of God. And, of course, you and I on this side of the cross, we say that, we praise that, because that's who he is. But on that side of the cross where they were putting all the puzzle pieces together, and they haven't quite gotten all that. This demon knew this. And then he understood the authority of Jesus. He said, I implore you by God, do not torment me. He didn't say, give me your all because I'm going to challenge you. He understood that Jesus was more powerful than those demons. He understood that Jesus had the authority and the right to do whatever he wanted to those demons. And so right there, in the most unlikely person, we find here the answer to the question, who is this that the wind and the sea obey him?
Yeah. Now, we often, and I believe with all of my heart, for good reason, refer to Jesus as the master teacher. But why, let me just put you on the spot, Roger, and ask you what you think. Why does this master teacher so often either not answer questions in the moment, or sometimes he will answer a question with a question? he will hear someone's question and essentially say, well, let me ask you this. Or maybe after telling a parable, one of his disciples will ask him, what does that mean? And he responds with another parable. Why does the master teacher teach so often in these ways?
I think he's trying to get the disciples, first of all, to think.
Yeah.
And not just to give the quick, easy answer. We do that sometimes. Sometimes we just give the quick, easy answer. I got a boatload of grandkids, and whenever we're together or out in the yard, they'll say, you know, what kind of bug is that? And I'll tell them the answer, oh, okay. It's like, okay. You know, and they're done with it for the rest of the day. You know, that's the end of they have a question, they got answered, and that's it. But I think the Lord oftentimes with questions or with parables is trying to get people to think, and from that, trying to build faith.
Absolutely.
That's where this is going. And so how easily he could have said at the end of chapter 4 when they asked, who then is this? I am the Son of God. Oh, okay, that's fine. No, I want you to see this. And so then throughout Mark 5, Jesus, these 12 apostles are going to be with him throughout most of this until the very last miracle. But what they're going to see here is he's going to demonstrate that over and over again. Three impossibilities come up in chapter 5. First of all, there's demons. And from the context, the town he lived in could do nothing. They tried to chain him. He broke the chains. He put shackles on him. He broke the shackles. Luke says they had a guard around him just because they could not do anything. Jesus could send those demons out. Then we come across this woman who has an issue of blood. She's been to a lot of doctors. She hasn't gotten well. Jesus cured her. Then we go to the synagogue official at the very end of the chapter. His 12-year-old girl dies. That's the end of the story, we would say. Jesus raises her up. And what these disciples are seeing from the storm, from nature, from spirits, whether we talk about demons, from disease, from death itself, which is Satan's greatest power, not only is this Jesus, but this is the Son of the Most High God. There are no limitations upon what Jesus can do.
Well, and what I love about putting yourself in, for instance, Mark chapter 4, Mark chapter 5, is these were experiences for these men. They could ask Jesus any question, and Jesus could answer anything that they ask. You're not going to stump Jesus somehow or frustrate his purposes in some way. But he doesn't simply field the questions and provide an informational answer and move on. And not only does he just happen to be in various circumstances and the disciples watch as he navigates his way through them, Jesus willfully, over and over again, steps into what you and I and every human being who has ever lived would describe as some of the most difficult, impossible of situations. Jesus steps into them and so often invites his disciples to experience those things with him in order to build trust. It reminds me of this past week. I was with my daughters, and we had the opportunity to ride some roller coasters. And, you know, you can talk with a young child or even a preteen or a young teen about some roller coaster that they have never experienced before. And I found myself over and over again throughout the week saying, trust me. You're going to need to experience this. I'm not going to put you in anything that's going to hurt you or harm you in any way. Trust me. And isn't that exactly what Jesus was seeking to build in the hearts of these men?
I think so. And I think as you and I read sections like this, then we need to build a bridge to ourselves. And so as they saw this Jesus, who is this that can calm the storms? Who is this that can cast out the demon? Who is this that can heal the disease? Who is this can bring back the dead? We can ask, who is this that forgives me? It's Jesus. Who is it that can change my life? It's Jesus. Who is it that can make me a better person? It's always the same answer. It comes back to Jesus. And so when we see sometimes in our lives, we get ourselves in messes sometimes, and we think, you know, there's no hope. This is such a bad problem, or, you know, that even God won't help me here. We see examples in sections of our Bibles like this where time and time again, mankind came up against the impossible. Somebody dies, that's in the story. We can't do anything more. Somebody has this incurable disease, there's nothing we can do. We got a storm, we just have to hunker down. There's nothing we can do. Jesus can do things. And that reminds us that no matter where we are, what's happened to us, Jesus can do something and can help us so much.
You started by reminding us of your opening illustration, the Titanic. You know, it's been discovered, but not recovered. And as we build this bridge from Mark 4, Mark 5 to us today, I think it is so important to realize, okay, one thing to hear the sermon, another thing to walk in the light of what is being revealed, right? It would even be one thing to experience these things with Jesus, another thing to be transformed and saved by Jesus. And that makes me think of this powerful connection that James makes in James chapter 2 when he encourages Christians to think. Someone will say, you have faith and I have works. To which he responds, show me your faith apart from your works and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that God is one, you do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. And I think that's at the heart of what you wanted all of us to understand on Sunday. The demon was telling the truth. Now, the demon, obviously, in his rebellion against God, inherits what Scripture describes in the most awful of terms. But that doesn't have to be my destiny or your destiny. If we will grapple with that question at the end of Mark chapter 4, who then is this, and follow the lead of Scripture in honoring him as the Son of the Most High God?
Why do you think that the demons or Jesus allowed the demons to go into the pigs?
Yeah. I think it goes back to an experience that not just these apostles had, but those villagers around. It was, in many ways, a sign, right? So often we have noticed in connection with the miracles of Jesus, these are described not just as wonders, but as signs. Who then is this? Well, there were 12 men in a boat that were forced to grapple with that question post-storm. Now, post these pigs running into the sea, we've got an entire village, even a region, that is brought face to face with this question. Who then is this?
And when we think about these demons, this wasn't mental disease. This wasn't some problem a guy had. These were spirits.
Yeah.
And you can't see a spirit. And so for the demons to go out, how would the people know? Now, this man's sitting down. He's, you know, they may think, well, that's a trick or something. They put these demons in these pigs, and you see those pigs run into the sea. Now, that sea was right there already, and there was a fit, and there was no fence already. So the pigs before the demons, they were not running to the sea. But with the demons in them, they kind of go wild, and they go into that sea. And that would demonstrate to everyone around who saw this, that the demons are out of this guy, and that was going to be the end. Now, where do we think the demons went to after the pigs drowned?
Well, ultimately, we know that in Jude, in 2 Peter, we know that these demons have an eternal destiny of torment apart from the living God, right?
That's it. And I think they went to where they didn't want to go in the first place, and that was to the torment.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus was doing there. So.
What I love about grappling with this question, whether 2,000 years ago today or today, who then is this? Ultimately, everyone needs to understand all roads converge at Jesus. I mean, I can choose, I can be like those villagers in Mark chapter 5 who beg him to leave, right? I can be like some of the officials who heard the apostles preach and maybe it scare me to death, or I say, well, go away for right now. It's not a convenient time. I can push it off. I can scoff. But the clear testimony of Scripture is, all roads converge at Jesus. It reminds me of our daily Bible reading from yesterday. If you're going with us in our Old Testament section, it's yesterday we were in Amos chapter 4, and God, through the prophet Amos, reveals a variety of things he allowed his people to experience. And over again he says, yet you did not return to me. Yet you did not return to me. And finally, he says, prepare to meet your God, O Israel. He allows us to ignore him for a while, to spurn him, even to mock him, to ignore him, to fail to honor him as God. But the day is coming when all roads converge before the throne. And when that happens, we want to have answered that fundamental question. Who then is this?
Yeah, and I think it's really sad in this Mark 5 context that when the owners, you know, they weren't there in the field to see all this, but their servants saw it and they ran to town and told them, so they all come out. That's a major loss. These are most likely Gentile people, because Jewish people wouldn't be having pigs. And they see 2,000 pigs in the sea. That's a major financial loss for them. But they would rather have this man being demon-possessed and having their pigs alive than have Jesus.
Yeah.
And so just as the demons implored Jesus to send them into the pigs, not torment, then we find in verse 17 the townspeople saying they implore Jesus to leave. And that's a choice people have. Do I want Jesus in my life, or do I not want Jesus in my life? And if Jesus is in my life, it's going to be on his way and his terms. And sometimes people just do not want that.
He is the road to recovery. The Positive Steps to Recovery was the title of your sermon. If you've not had the opportunity to watch or to listen to that, I would certainly encourage you to do that at charlestownroad.org. Roger, you posed that question from Mark chapter 4 of the apostles in the boat, don't you care? And Lord willing, this Friday, we'll talk even a little bit about that in our Friday series, where we're looking at questions our hymns ask. We'll continue to explore this doesn't Jesus care question. But in the meantime, we appreciate our listeners listening, tuning in, sharing if you have found this content helpful. Roger, this evening we've got the opportunity to gather as a church family, Bible classes for all ages. You're teaching right now in the auditorium. What do you have lined up?
Our series is The Battle for the Mind. The mind is I think one of the most precious things God gives us, it is the source of all that we are. And as we've been looking layers at layers at different lessons, tonight we're going to talk about the battle continues and look at an Old Testament example and some parallels to us today.
In our Building Blocks course of studies for a variety of different ages, including an adult class, we're continuing our exploration of who is the enemy. And Lord willing, tonight we'll be right back here with Jesus exploring how he defeated temptation. We would love to see you in person this evening at 7 o'clock p.m. I've got the privilege of preaching, Lord willing, this coming Sunday morning at 9:30 a.m., and I'm going to talk about the proper place of self. Society around us puts all sorts of things beside self. Jesus put just one thing beside self, and that's a really important thing for all of us to understand and to apply. That's this Sunday, 9:30 a.m. We've got Bible classes for all ages immediately after that. A lot of really good, encouraging things going on here at Charlestown Road. We would love to have you come and grow with us.